Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo calling in from sunny magnificence. Southern California. Yes, the Donna Sebo Show is coming live from this beautiful part of the planet that is absolutely awesome to be in. The blue skies are out there. The puffy white clouds are floating in those blue skies, and it's absolutely, utterly delightful to be here. So I'm looking forward to being able to reach our guest, Tom Devine. Today we are going to be talking about his absolutely awesome book, The Corporate Whistleblower's Survival Guide. Now, Tom Devine is in Washington, D.C., so I'm hoping he didn't get stuck somewhere in traffic. We're looking forward to having him as a guest, but he's not on the line with us right now, so we're waiting for him to be in touch. In the interim, I wanted to take this opportunity to thank the wonderful people at KZUM in Santa Barbara, California, who were just so absolutely gracious. I had the opportunity to do a broadcast with them, and we just had a marvelous time. And of course, Santa Barbara is absolutely a magnificent community, and if ever you have the chance to come into the Southern California area, I highly recommend you're visiting that beautiful locale. There's nothing like the magnificent beaches of Santa Barbara. And of course, again, I want to thank all of the wonderful people that were there with me and that I shared broadcasting time with. It was absolutely terrific. Well, as we're waiting for Tom to call in, I wanted to share a story with you today about a young lady. And she's just as cute as she can be. And her attitude is that we need a society that doesn't just look green. Well, she is all of 33 years of age. Her name is Zakiya Harris, and she lives in this state of California. She lives up north in Oakland. And what she's wanting to do is to really make a difference relative to the environment that we're in. Now, she always, her entire life, she's loved being a part of nature, being involved with nature. When she was growing up in Oakland, California, it was nowhere near as populated as it is now. And from a very young age, she decided she was going to avoid chemicals in her food and her beauty products. And she really wanted to take a very proactive approach to making life a little bit better. And she decided that when she got her degree, she was going to teach in low-income schools, and so that's what she did. But what she found, because of her awareness and her attitude about nature and trying to avoid pesticides and things like this, when she came in contact with all of these young students, she realized they didn't have a clue. Here were these kids that were living a lifestyle that basically was in a very concrete kind of environment. They didn't understand how nature had an impact on their life and how they needed to be aware of things so that they could be healthier. She said, in her observation, many communities, and some of them, she called them communities of color, she said, people are just trying to survive day to day. It's all they can do to put food on the table. So the last thing they're concerned about is what might be considered an environmental attitude. So she decided she wanted to do something to make a difference with these low-income areas, and she wanted to teach children how they could sustain themselves, how they could manage their own lives. And in 2007, she founded a group. It's called Grind for the Green, and the abbreviation is G, the number 4, and then G. And this group of people is entirely dedicated to educating children as well as training them or getting them prepared to be able to go into a job environment that will be waiting for them when they get out of school. But she does something that I think is very innovative. She uses hip-hop music. That's what she does. And she said the kids love the music. So we embraced the hip-hop so we could make a connection with the children. Now, this is one smart gal, because music is one of the best ways to teach. How many of you learned your ABCs by singing them? How many of you learned how to work with numbers by singing them or putting them to a beat of some kind? Sesame Street incorporated that a long time ago, and that's why children really enjoy learning. So she decided that there was going to be a project, and this was sort of early on with her group, a free solar-powered hip-hop concert, and this was done in San Francisco. They managed to get some solar panels and put them on top of a mobile trailer, and it generated all of the electricity for the equipment. And the kids then were very proactive and involved because they put up concession stands, and they figured out, they worked together as a team to figure out what kind of food they were going to offer, what kind of smoothies they were going to fix. You'll never guess how they managed to get those smoothies made. They had to ride bikes. That's right. They used the bicycles to generate the energy to cause the blenders to work. Well, it was incredibly successful, and you can imagine how many people were really, really impressed with this. So since then, they've had other G4G concerts, and there's all kinds of people who, when they found out how effectively organized this was and how the kids were so enthusiastic, they said, we really want to be a part of this. And she said, we have been able to reach a demographic of young kids that couldn't be reached before. So she said, all of our activities are produced by the kids. And she said, you have to know, she tells this to the kids, you have to make this relevant to your age group and your neighborhood. She said, I have found that a lot of people, the only reason they don't do certain things or they're not aware of certain things is that nobody has really brought the information to them. She said, since we have founded our group, she's seen communities become engaged. Once they've been empowered by education and learn a way to do something about it. Now stop and think about her words. Once someone has been empowered by education and they learn a way to do something about it. How many times can any of us look at our own lives and wonder if we had known what to do, would we have been aware of different choices? And that is so important. And this young lady, she's 33 years of age. Zakiya Harris is her name. I think that she has just done something so exceptional, and she's a wonderful example for any of us. How do you take charge and make a difference? How do you reach out to those people that are most significant to you to let them know about different things that you've learned? Now, I know there's always individuals that are not open and receptive, but has it ever occurred to you sometimes when people may not be open and receptive at one moment, the reason that they're not is they might be preoccupied? Today I had a client that I was chatting with here in California, and this person is going through so many, many challenges. Fortunately, I had had a conversation with an individual just yesterday, and in the course of conversation, all kinds of information came out. So I called this person I talked to yesterday, saying, you brought up certain points of information. Can you give me XYZ details? They did, and I passed him over to this other individual. That's what we need to remember. We may not know the absolute correct solution for someone, but if we have information that we can pass along that we know is valid, if it enables someone to realize that they have choices, it can make such a difference. So many times we can be stuck in a situation. It can be any number of things. There's no finite amount of challenges in life. It's actually infinite. But there's usually someone, someplace, somewhere that maybe has gone through something similar. And they can say, do this, do that, do the other. I, last week, when I was in the radio station, I was talking with an individual, and this person said when they were younger, they had not been taught how to ask questions. They had not been aware of the various opportunities of choice that were really available to them. And one of the biggest challenges they found was learning how to ask questions and learning how to investigate what options there are. How many of us have felt like we couldn't see the forest for the trees? We were so engrossed right where we are with what we were doing, and we just say, oh my goodness, there can't possibly be a resolution. I guarantee you there is. So this young lady, I really think, has done something very special. She came up with a concept. She said, why not? What have we got to lose? Let's try. And in using music as a tool, she was able to reach a lot of young people. And then they got excited. They decided they wanted to participate. And that is so very, very important. Lots of times in today's world, we get so caught up with bureaucracies, we get so caught up with so many different agendas that we feel like we can't go anywhere. I remember watching a program. This was a number of years ago, and it was about a Buddhist monk. He was in India. India has a tremendous amount of poverty. It's absolutely unbelievable, unless you've seen it. And he was saying that one of the biggest challenges they had was dealing with disease. They had no sewage system, and he had become fairly well-educated, learned about sewage systems, and he decided he was going to bring this to India. He had a site all set up. Everything was laid out. He went through all the bureaucratic red tape. He got the funding. The money came in. And on this program, they showed the miles of pipe that had never been laid. All of the money had been taken by bureaucrats, and it had never gotten down to the common people. And he was so discouraged for such a long time, and then he said he realized what he needed to do. He couldn't do too much of anything with the system that was in place, but what he could do was teach children about what they needed to be aware of so that when they became adults, perhaps they would take the time to make a difference. So he started teaching the youth, just like this woman did. That is very important because it is the younger generation that is going to be having to take care of whatever is going on in the world. And that is something that we need to remember. Sometimes we bang our heads up against a wall, a real thick brick and concrete wall with steel girders, wondering what's wrong, why have we failed, and we get discouraged. Where maybe we need to take a different approach with whatever our challenges are and say, okay, this one didn't work. What else do I do? This is Donna Sebo. So far, we've not been able to reach Tom Levine. And we may get fortunate where he's able to call in. If he's gotten stuck in a traffic jam like I've experienced in Washington, D.C., well, it may be later in the program. And if for some reason something has happened where he wasn't able to make the interview, then we definitely will be having him on anyway. His book is called The Corporate Whistleblower's Survival Guide, and it is published in association with the Government Accountability Project. It's quite a fascinating publication. So we will still be waiting for his call and hoping he's going to call in. Donna Sebo here. If you want to give me a buzz during the show today, the toll-free telephone number is going to be 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Donna Sebo here. I'm broadcasting to you from sunny California. I have the most beautiful picture in front of me. It has all of the colors of autumn. This picture had to have been taken in New England somewhere, which, by the way, for those of you on the East Coast, I just say go out and enjoy all of the gorgeous beauty of the colors that you have there. Connecticut, New York, New Jersey, the East Coast, Virginia, the Blue Ridge Mountain Highway is breathtakingly beautiful. Whenever you have a chance just to drive, just make it a slow, easy-going drive. You will see beauty that'll just literally take your breath away. Mother Nature puts on a show of shows. And Roberta Toffmeyer wrote a little poem relative to this. And again, it's the backdrop is this incredible picture of yellows and oranges and brilliant reds and fading golds into browns and greens. It's just incredibly gorgeous. This is what she said. Sweet September, living jewel of gold and ruby red sparkling like 1,000 diamonds across the fields of autumn. Boy, that's an apt description. And again, the beautiful photograph that goes along with it is just fabulous. But if you want to give me a buzz, if this is your first time listening to the show, all you need to do if you'd like to get an intuitive reading on the air is give me a buzz at 888-627-6008. Donna Sebo here. Well, I'll tell you what. There is so much going on in this world. Oh, and I have got a wonderful, wonderful recipe for spicy pumpkin seeds. You know, pumpkins are coming out, and they had at the Puyallup Fair in Washington, in Puyallup, Washington, which is one of the biggest fairs in the country. They always have a contest for the biggest pumpkins. I'm telling you, it's hard to believe that a pumpkin can get to be over 1,000 pounds. That's right, over 1,000 pounds. Wonder how many pies that would make. I wouldn't have the time to sit down and calculate it. But I will tell you, there is a recipe I've got for spicy pumpkin seeds that I really think you'll enjoy. So you might want to have a pad of paper and a pen handy to be able to write it down because it's so easy to fix. And, of course, you can also always get pumpkin seeds at the store, your health food store, if you want. You can just do that. But if you're going to be fixing up a bunch of pumpkins, my goodness, they're going to be out all over the place because we have got the holiday season of fun and festivity that's going to be coming up. And that one's called Halloween. Of course, that's a little bit off, but by golly, everybody's out preparing for it. I've seen costumes all over the place. I can hardly believe it. Well, anyway, this is the time of the year when those wonderful, wonderful pumpkins come out. And so this is a way of taking those pumpkin seeds that normally you just pitch, well, save them, and they're nice and spicy. Now, why are pumpkin seeds valuable to have as far as nutrition goes? Well, they give you zinc, which is very important for brain health, and it's just got a number of other nutritional aspects. And the pumpkin itself is just loaded with all kinds of vitamins. So it's very, very good. And you know what? It's good for kids. And it's not just for pumpkin pie. There's a gazillion and one different recipes for pumpkin. And in coming shows, I'll be sharing some of those with you. But pumpkin is a very good winter vegetable to have. And kids like it, especially if it's seasoned well. They really do enjoy that. Now, your kids, they're in school now. They're going through adjustments of being in school and following their routines. And kids, just like adults, need to really have good nutrition. So you want to be sure that you really get those vegetables in them. And one of the best ways to get the vegetables into kids, I think, is with soup. That's my bias. And also maybe having them work with you in the kitchen and create some recipes. And it's a wonderful way to get kids involved with cooking. In the kitchen, it's something that's really, really special. But I'll tell you what, too. Cocoa, which is, I think, a great treat for kids, and you can do it in a very healthy way. Some children are not able to have cow's milk, then use almond milk. That's going to be very healthy, or rice milk. I'm not into soy milk for kids. I just don't think that that's a good thing. But I do think that cocoa is something that really makes a difference. It is a food that science has proven for many, many years is very good for anyone to have. Well, guess what? There was a British study that was done about how on drinking cocoa and how when you drink cocoa, it has an immediate energizing effect on the brain. It's flavanol rich. When kids had something like a cocoa drink before they took their math test, they actually did better. And they didn't feel like they were drained mentally after they took the test. My goodness, what did people do that scored so highly on tests years ago before they discovered this? I have no idea. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. We're still trying to reach our guest, Tom Devine. Have not been able to do so, but as soon as we do, if we're able to today or this evening, he's back in Washington, D.C. We'll be bringing him right on. Now, a lot of you at this time have pets that you really are wanting to keep healthy. And if you're like so many people, you're on a budget. And sometimes we really get concerned about the prices of items, and we want to say, gee, how can I take good care of my pet and really feel like I can handle the animal's needs within my budget? Well, apparently, when it comes to flea and tick treatments, there's something that's happened that's quite significant. There's a patent on a product that contains fipronil, F-I-P-R-O-N-I-L. Now, this is an ingredient that has been a primary ingredient in flea and tick killing products. So, other companies now are able to use the same insecticide in their product while offering them at a lower price. And some people did some research, and this is what they found. Pet Armor Plus for $28 per 3 month supply at Walmart is the same thing that you will have gotten through another product called Frontline. So it's a big savings. And I just got this information. I thought, okay, I'll pass it along to you. I know what it's like. My Scottish Terrier, he didn't have a problem with fleas until, just about a month ago when the sun came out in the Pacific Northwest. Then we started having some problems. So this information is good information. And there's a lot of places that you can shop where you can find a break on pet food. Still get the quality food maybe you've been buying, but you might be able to save up to 25% less than at supermarkets and chain pet stores. So what you want to do, if you want to find out about how to save money, what's suggested is that you go to visit the websites and Facebook pages of your favorite brands for coupons. They often have very, very special coupons. Also, for those of you that might be on a very tight budget, maybe you lost your job, maybe you're a senior citizen, you can save up to 75% on your pet care at veterinary schools. What goes on there is that the students are supervised by licensed vets, so you will be assured that your pet is going to be treated very, very well. And you can go check out in your local area, veterinaryschools.com/veterinary-school-directory. And that can make a big difference for you. So check it out, veterinaryschools.com/veterinary-school-directory. Hello, do we have Tom?
Yes, I'm so sorry to be tired of getting on the line. I was dealing with a client emergency with one of my whistleblowers.
Well, Tom, I'll tell you what. What we'll do, we're going to take a break for just a minute because I want to be able to really give time to you. Your book is so impressive. Ladies and gentlemen, we have Tom Devine on the air with us. He is one of the authors, along with Tariq S. Masirani, The Corporate Whistleblower's Survival Guide. This book is incredible, and we're going to be sharing some information with you. Tom, will you stay with me? We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back,
absolutely. We're
going to go right to you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Well, we were able to reach Tom Levine, and he's on the line with me. Tom, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm really, really excited about discussing this with you, the Corporate Whistleblower Survival Guide. The reason I'm so impressed is all of the information that you have in here is so succinct, and I'm just absolutely amazed at what options people have. Now, for my listeners, I want them to know that you're the legal director of the Government Accountability Project, which has been, since 1977, helping well over 5,000 people take on organizations, as you put it, like AIG, Bechtel, the World Bank, Procter & Gamble, Wyeth Pharmaceuticals, and others, and come out ahead. You've received the Fund for Constitutional Government's Defender of the Constitution Award, and you're a member of the Freedom of Information Act Hall of Fame. Tarek Masrani is a practicing attorney and is a former investigator with the Government Accountability Project, and currently he serves as an adjunct professor at George Washington University. Tom, the material in this book is really so straightforward. Why did you feel, I mean, I know that this particular project, the Government Accountability Project, has been in place since 1977. How did you get involved in this? I mean, what's your story?
Well, if I weren't a lawyer for whistleblowers, I'd be one. And I don't have a martyr complex, so I decided to take the only job that I wouldn't get fired from.
Well, that's one way of looking at something.
Also, I knew from the first time that I heard a whistleblower, in particular case, Tony Morris, the FDA scientist who warned that the swine flu vaccine fiasco in the 1970s, that these were the people that I wanted to spend my life helping. They're the individuals who personify the facts of life, that we can create our own reality, that we're not helpless. We can make a difference, and they're the ones who keep proving that we live in a free society, because in a free society, nothing's more powerful than the truth. And almost all my clients who have successfully challenged the corporate behemoths that you listed, they were David's taking on Goliath, and they won because they have mm-hmm. the truth in their slingshots. And it's just very, very inspiring. For me, it's not even work. It's an opportunity to get paid to pursue my calling and prove all the cynics wrong and say that just look the other way. You can't do anything.
Now, the GAP, which is the abbreviation for the Government Accountability Project, apparently put out what you called a primer in your book in 1977, and it was titled A Federal Employee's Guide to the Federal Bureaucracy. Mm-hmm. And it took all of these years and various aspects of legalities, procedures, protocols, whatever terminology you wanted to use, to get this book put out. Now, most people, when they hear the term whistleblower, it is felt as a very derogatory statement. This is not easy to deal with when you are going to be stepping up, speaking out, and that's part of what this book is all about. How does someone do this so that they're not going to be slam dunk? I mean, you even have sections in your book on how to deal with the media. This is very, very explicit.
Oh, absolutely. The key for turning the truth into power is what we call legal campaigns, not just legal cases, but campaigns where by playing information matchmaker, we can reverse the dynamic of isolation and turn it into public solidarity by all the nooks and crannies in our society who should be benefiting from the whistleblower's knowledge. And that's a lot what we do at GAP, is play matchmaker so that people are aware of what's being done to them and so they can rally behind the lonely, gutsy person who's defending them. When that happens, it's just amazing how the largest, seemingly arrogant and invincible bureaucracies might as well be a house of cards. If instead of a corrupt corporate or government bureaucracy surrounding the isolated whistleblower, society surrounds that bureaucracy. That's the formula. And you're right. You're just so right, Donna, that it's traditionally, historically, been considered an unpopular concept. I think a more accurate perspective on it currently is it's a dangerous concept. Mm-hmm. As long as we've had organized society, there's been individuals or institutions that had the power and were abusing it for their own personal agendas or their own hidden agendas rather than the purpose that the power is could be responsibly exercised to promote. And as long as that's been happening, there's been people who have been standing up to it and saying that's wrong. And as long as they have, they've been getting smashed. It's like the institutional equivalent of an animal instinct. It's not moral or immoral. When animals are threatened, they try to eliminate the threat. I don't think any of us are above that. If someone slugs me, I don't think, you know, what did I do to cause that? And maybe I had it coming, and there's some lessons to be learned from my behavior. I want to slug that person back and flatten the son of a gun for two mm-hmm. reasons. Mm-hmm. One is they've hurt me, and I'm angry. I'm upset about it. It's just natural. Mm-hmm. And the second is I don't want to give them a chance to do it again to me. And that's the way organizations react to whistleblowers. It's never going to be something that's safe. But these abuses of power that we take on and team up with whistleblowers to challenge are generally so outrageous that they only can be sustained through secrecy. And that's why the whistleblowers can come out on top if they're strategic in how they use the truth. And in fact, we kind of call it out Machiavelling the Machiavellis sometimes.
Well, that to me was significant. I felt like after reading, going through over half of the book, and I went through even more, but just when I got halfway through, I thought, good Lord, I need to go get a degree in law, because there is definitely a procedure to follow so that you don't get squashed like a June bug when you don't want to. You had in here an example about a man, Ernie Fitzgerald, and you've got many in the book. This was a whistleblower who talked about the billions of dollars of waste at the Pentagon. Now, the Pentagon is a behemoth. This is a bureaucracy within a bureaucracy within a bureaucracy. This has been around for a long, long time. And yet, this was something that ended up working out in a positive way?
Well, Ernie was a survivor. He was my mentor and teacher, as well as a client, and he came up with the phrase that whistleblowing is committing the truth because you're treated like you committed a crime. He did have a huge impact on the government. He exposed the $2 billion cost overrun in the C-5A cargo plane during the Johnson administration in the late 1960s. And it was interesting, when President Nixon took office, it came out in the Watergate tapes. Even though Fitzgerald had blown the whistle on the Democrats, Nixon instructed Haldeman and Ehrlichman to fire that son of a bee, fill in the blank. He stated it so succinctly. He said, it's not that he was wrong. It's that he might attack us next. And that's traditionally the perspective of bureaucracies. But Ernie was a scrappy survivor, and he won his court decisions. He developed constituencies to support him. And he ended up being the whistleblower who exposed the world's most expensive nuts, bolts, coffee seats, toilet pots, everything else during the Reagan administration, some 13 years later. He's made a tremendous difference in our society, but he's hardly an aberration. Whistleblowers are the people who keep our society from being stagnant, and they've changed the course of history over and over and over again, preventing avoidable disasters, exposing people who are, in theory, beyond accountability, but really weren't more powerful than the law if the truth were used effectively. And when we haven't listened to them, we've had horrible tragedies. Just to give you an example of when the high and mighty couldn't be above the truth. Paul Wolfowitz went into the World Bank as president of the World Bank, a supposed genius who was the mastermind of the Iraq War, and went into the World Bank on a crusade to clean up corruption in the rest of the world. And thanks to whistleblowers, we learned that his main qualification was teaching how to get away with corruption. And within 3 months of the first whistleblower approaching GAP, he had to resign his office. That's not an aberration. There was a whistleblower in the Netherlands, Paul van Buitenen, just an honest auditor. And he learned that all of the officials of the European, all the commissioners on the EC, European Commission, were getting bribes for procurement. He traced that the ringleader for the bribes was the president of the EC, Edith Cresson, and the bagman was her dentist. He exposed this. They all had to resign, all the commissioners and President Cresson, and the dentist went to jail. The truth really can matter. But what happens when we ignore these people? I've represented half a dozen whistleblowers who were top national security professionals who tried to warn before 9-1-1. that we were sending ducks for this because the airports weren't secure and they were breaching security during their dry runs routinely, that they discovered the plans for 911 and wanted to go in and seize them, and they were blocked in each case by the bureaucracy, by the national security bureaucracy, and as a result, we had a tragedy. And what's been the government's reaction to this? Well, that instead of listening to the messenger the way our government should have, we've decided to increase secrecy and cancel the Constitution and set up a new Homeland Security multi-billion-dollar industrial complex to throw money through the same institutions that wasted it before. Whistleblowing is a very it's a win-win way to deal with abuses of power and to defend the public for everyone except those who are abusing it. You know, most attacks against corruption, they're very expensive, cost a lot of money, and they're very expensive in terms of our freedom. We just don't have the luxury of all that liberty if we're going to be safe. But, you know, it doesn't cost anything to listen. Mm-hmm. It's free. Mm-hmm. And whistleblowing defends our nation's security. It fights corruption by strengthening freedom instead of canceling it. And, boy, you think of within the corporate world, it's just so short-sighted that there is this repression against whistleblowers. Look at what happened at Enron. The president of Enron, when Sharon Watkins tried to warn that the company was going to go bankrupt, they couldn't sustain the illegality, and his reaction was to get her fired. Try to get her fired was the first reaction, and ignore her warnings. And in the end, Enron went bankrupt, and the president, the chief executive officer, Mr. Lay, ended up dying in disgrace before he could go to jail, being convicted as a felon. We give the message all the time to businesses that it's bad business to kill the messenger. In fact, PricewaterhouseCoopers did a global survey that was very, very in-depth, 5,400 corporations in 40 countries, and they concluded that whistleblowers were responsible for exposing and detecting more internal fraud against the companies than the compliance departments, the audit departments, and law enforcement combined. Mm-hmm. Organizations that have a free flow of information within them are the ones that are the healthiest, but don't end up having to cover up things from the public.
Dr. Jeffrey Wigand, who is formerly, he was a high-ranking tobacco industry executive, had really become very outspoken, and I'm quoting from your book. He said, "I regret being so naive. I think the American public needs to realize that very few federal protection policies are actually really followed. It seems as if you see no evil, hear no evil, no harm has really been done. But if you are really ethical, it's hard to have an easy life." And, of course, there's more in his statement that's quite powerful. And then I just want to quote here, "If you think what you are doing is right, you should do it, though you have to understand the likely consequences. If you are prepared to accept those consequences, then go for it. I don't regret raising this at all, and I certainly would raise it again. I think also you can't raise these things in a half-hearted way. If you're going to blow the whistle, then you should do it as loudly and publicly as possible." That's a quote by Dr. Aubrey Blumson, who blew the whistle on Procter and Gamble with about an osteoporosis drug. What would you know? This there are so many things again that are in your book. Let's talk about what we need to know. If someone, let's say, who's listening to this show right now, is aware of bookkeeping, and they say, "My goodness, there's this going on, there's that going on, this is not right." The reason I think we ought to cover this is I know of a young woman who went to work for a corporation. This is back on the East Coast. And she is one of these meticulous people, and she knew where all of the dollars were going. She knew what was being mishandled. She knew who was mishandling what. And she was speaking up, and she had fortunately kept records on things to a degree, but not as thoroughly as she should have. And one day she finds she's not allowed in the building. She's been fired. They won't let her touch her computer. They confiscated everything she had. They put her things in a box, took them outside the building, and said she was forbidden to come into the building. It was really an experience. I don't think that she's still over. And she was furious because she knew what was going on in the company was robbing shareholders and other things. What do you need to do? How should a person conduct themselves if they know that something like this is going on? They know that there are unethical people that are lying and cheating and stealing from the company and or shareholders. What are the steps? What do you do?
Well, the first thing you do is take a very in-depth course about what the risks are that you'll be exposing yourself to, what the possible consequences are going to be, and make sure that you and all your loved ones who are counting on you still want to do this after having your eyes wide open, a fully informed choice of what you're getting into. This is a life's crossroads decision, and it'll never be the same for you again. The second thing that you need to do is complete all your homework before you identify yourself as a threat. As soon as that happens, as soon as an organization is aware that you could be a threat, they'll start to take the natural reaction of eliminating it and you in terms of the professional damage that you could cause to them. The third thing that you have to do is give the organization a chance to do the right thing without exposing how much you know about misconduct. So often a whistleblower can, an employee can accomplish much, much more as a problem solver by finding the right people within the organization who want to take the more far-sighted approach to limiting liability than by being a critic who's threatening. It's far less retaliation if you're a problem solver instead of a dissident, and you're not forcing the organization into a defensive posture where people who have just lost and been humiliated, institutions just been humiliated, generally don't react by having been born again into better social values in the aftermath. They're seething, having been defeated and humiliated, and that's not the way to accomplish lasting change. Then the fourth cornerstone is if you have tried all that and the organization is not responding and you still feel firm in your choice that you won't be true to yourself by looking the other way, then you go all out. This is not something to do halfway. This is it's going to be a no prisoners struggle, and numerous whistleblowers have prevailed, but only because they had an effective legal campaign. They weren't just crying in the wilderness. They 60 Minutes was their megaphone. The front page of the New York Times or the Washington Post or USA Today was broadcasting their message, getting it out to all the people who should be knowing about it. They'd gone to both parties in Congress and got them competing to see who is going to be the knight galloping to the rescue. We go to all the different branches of the government regulatory agencies that where one branch might be covering it up, another one competing with them may blow the whistle more aggressively than the employee, because they're competing for bureaucratic power within cutthroat bureaucracies and institutions. We make sure that we educate all the NGOs and stakeholders, citizens' organizations, who are being betrayed by this abuse of power. They know it's being done with them, and they can organize in their own self-interest. And when that happens, the truth is unstoppable. But if you hold back, you'll be smothered. There'll be an avalanche of corporate resources and wealth that you'll be crushed under. So that's sort of some of the tactics. Other tactics that we have is we call it guerrilla legal warfare, that the large organization needs to be constantly reacting to your initiatives rather than you responding to all the rules of the game, where they can just overwhelm you through the conventional legal processes. And a significant part of the book is all the steps that you should take before you blow the whistle, and all the survival strategies for how to deal with the stress of it afterwards, as well as what your legal rights are.
There is, again, so much detail in this that I think is absolutely amazing, and I think it's very much to the point. And one of the aspects that you go into, one of many, is related to the media. I know, having been involved in media for so many years and the experiences that I've had through the years in various applications, sometimes you can get a reporter that is just out in la-la land and you will not have honest representation of what you say. I was very impressed with how you really lay out the ground rules for interacting with media. And I've known people who have been just absolutely shredded because of misinformed, ignorant reporters that maybe presented something, and when it was presented maybe to editors, they totally reconfigured a lot of the presentation, not giving anything in actual printed context or even verbal context that was correct. And it was so misinforming. They cut and paste, basically, whatever they wanted, creating something that was just absolutely unbelievable. It reminded me of the Schwarzenegger movie, The Running Man, where someone just made up a whole scenario and that was publicized and everybody thought that was the truth. The media is extremely potent and extremely powerful, but by golly, you do have to watch out for what you do.
It's those same stakes for every one of the partners that a whistleblower needs to effectively get the word out to the public that should be upset and reinforcing the message, whether it's the media, whether it's politicians, whether it's government investigators, even citizen NGOs who have all their own agendas. Every one of these partners can be very treacherous, or they can be the key to the breakthrough for turning the truth into power. And that's really the reason for preparing this book, is that this is such a high-stakes and high-risk choice that there's really not the luxury to learn as you go, trial and error. Mm-hmm. With the 5,000 folks that I've worked with since 1979, we've painfully learned those lessons. And the idea is to share them with other folks so that they can have more of an impact with a lot less pain in the process.
You talk about advocacy partners. You bring out information which I was not aware of, that WikiLeaks, for example, was founded by Chinese dissidents, journalists, mathematicians, and startup company technologists from the U.S., Taiwan, Europe, Australia, and South Africa. And they wanted to do this because they wanted to speak out against oppressive regimes and unethical behavior, and they didn't want to create unnecessary risk for people. And that's sort of like a two-edged sword, because electronic communications I mean, it's becoming more and more something that people have to be alert to. One, it can be traced, and two, it's legal to use. If you've put something out there, I mean, there's a lot of employers now that are searching Facebook. They have teams on people that search out people. What have they put on Facebook? What's there? How do they represent themselves? Is there anything that we do not want to have an association with? And it's interesting how people seem to think, especially the younger generation, but I know a lot of adults too, they seem to think anything they put online is private, that nobody else is going to see it. Boy, is that wrong.
I'm very grateful to that as a parent on occasion. Mm-hmm. I learn a lot more from Facebook about my son than I do from talking to him. But it's you're right. It's whenever you're going to be disclosing information which could end up identifying you as a threat to an institution that you're vulnerable to or dependent upon, you're exposing yourself to potential retaliation. People should be very, very careful. They shouldn't be silent, but they should be careful. Mm-hmm. Because this is the sort of thing that if you make a mistake, it might be your last one in terms of your professional survival.
I agree. Now, I know we're just about out of time here, Tom. Tom Devine has been my guest. This powerful book, it's a handbook for committing the truth. It's the Corporate Whistleblower's Survival Guide. And I'll tell you, when you read it, have a highlighter in hand and really think about what you're reading, because it makes a difference and it gives such good information if you're a person in business, and you really want to make sure that you keep everything on the up and up, this is a book you should read also. It is something that I think is very, very important. Tom, where can people find out more information about G4P?
Our website is www.whistleblowersingular.org. And if you check our website, you'll see that the corporate employees have benefited from a legal revolution in corporate free speech rights over the last 10 years. It's an amazing phenomenon. It was another catalyst for writing this book. But the government employees are still in the dark ages. And we've been working for 12 years to get their rights upgraded so they're at the same level as the private sector whistleblowers. And we can use everybody's help. So check our website and sign up for a hitch in getting more open government and freedom of speech for those within the government who want the public to know what's happening.
Tom Levine, I'm so delighted we were finally able to reach you. It's been great having you as a guest. For those of you listening, we're out of time. This is Donna Sebo. Thank you for sharing your time with us this afternoon, this evening, wherever you might be. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. We'll talk to you manana. Bye for now.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedros accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny. They will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.